Heidely ho, listeners.
What the?
I don't know. I don't know what that was. So this is the 12th Big Planet Comics podcast. My name's Kevin.
My name is Nick.
And my name is Jared.
No, Jared's not here this week.
Jared, was that the accurate Jared voice?
I don't think it was a very accurate Jared voice. No. But yeah, so Jared's out of town this week. We missed last week because I suffered a massive injury.
Yeah, he had a heart attack, a stroke.
I had a stroke.
No, none of those.
It was terrible. But yeah. So let's go through the whole rigmarole at the beginning.
Yeah, rigmarole.
You guys like rigmarole because that's what's about to happen. All right. So you know, you can check us out on our webpage, bigplanetcomics.com.
Yep.
You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, and you can be friends with us on Facebook
or in real life.
Not us personally, but Big Planet Comics. You can be friends with us personally too if you're our personal friends, which is probably the only people that listen to this thing anyway. So let's do this. You ready to do this?
Nah.
Let's get in the news. All right.
Holy smokes.
Holy smokes. Yeah, so the big thing happened this week. The DC New 52 universe launched. Justice League number one came out.
Chirp, chirp, chirp.
No,
I'm just kidding.
No, it was exciting. A lot of new people came into the store. People seem pretty excited about it.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to say right off the bat that Justice League number one was actually really good.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I think what we're gonna do is we're gonna talk about Justice League number one and Flashpoint 5, which is the thing that set this whole thing off. We're gonna talk about that at the end because we want to go a little bit in depth in it, but we don't want to spoil it for people. So basically, when we get to that, if you haven't read Justice League yet, you can turn the podcast off if you haven't done that already. and
if you even turned it on,
yeah. And if you're thinking about reading it and you don't want to get spoiled, just know it was good.
Yeah,
it was really good. So in some related news, everybody, you know, they started this whole relaunch, and everybody was kind of wondering what was going on with the JSA. That seemed to be the big missing piece in all this.
What happened to Green Lantern?
Well, no, Green Lantern's in it.
No, the other Green Lantern.
Oh, the other Green Lantern, Alan Scott.
That's it.
Well, I will say the JSA is returning.
From where?
From being gone.
Oh, okay, I got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta help me out here.
I thought like at the, you know, and there's gonna be some new storyline where they're like, oh yeah, the JSA has been here, but we just forgot.
I feel like this thing is gonna go totally off the rails without Jared here.
Nah, I'll be alright.
Yeah, I think we'll be okay. But so James Robinson has confirmed that he's working on a new Justice Society project with Nicola Scott, who was an artist that I was disappointed I didn't see her name on any of these new 52 books. So it's nice to know she's working on something. She's really good. She drew Secret Six for a long time.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be a JSA story, but it's going to take a place on a parallel Earth.
Earth 2.
Yeah. So they're already sort of reintroducing the multiverse.
Yeah.
So two months in, things are going to get complicated. Yikes. Already. But Robinson, you know, he wrote the Golden Age back in the day, which was great. And I think he co-wrote with Jeff Johns for a while, the regular JSA series, like in the early 2000s, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and that was great. So, I mean, Robinson's a good choice for it. His work on Justice League recently hasn't been so...
Not so good.
Not so good. But I feel like he's got, you know, he's got a little bit of something invested in JSA, so I think he's going to do a good job.
Yeah, yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. I like Nicholas Scott's art, always awesome, so it should be pretty good.
And he should be able to do what he wants to because it's a completely different Earth. I think the problem with his Justice League stuff was, you know, all these like Superman was walking around.
Yeah, yeah.
And Wonder Woman was like in this other Themyscira or whatever. And like Batman was dead for a little while. Yeah, and it was like, so he got to, you know, he just had all these characters that he couldn't use.
It'd be cool if, is this a period piece? I guess we don't know really anything about it, but.
Yeah, it's just been announced. I mean, we'll find out more.
I'm kind of hoping it takes place like World War II. That'd be really interesting. They haven't really done like an ongoing series that takes place in World War II, you know?
Yeah, well, maybe there was no World War II in Earth 2.
What?
Yeah, I know. I just blew your mind. So so that's interesting. I think, I guess we'll start to see more things pop up in the new 52. You know, people saw those 52 books and just assumed that a lot of these elements weren't going to be there anymore. Like maybe Power Girl will pop up.
Yeah.
Maybe not, though.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, maybe. But JSA is back, so quit your whining.
Quit your whining.
And we don't have a lot of news this week, but this other one's pretty cool. Basically, the Small Press Expo, which is probably the biggest convention in DC. It's next weekend, September 10th and 11th.
Woo!
There are a bunch of great people there. Craig Thompson, who did Blankets, is going to be there. Ross Chast, who's a New Yorker cartoonist. Kate Beaton, who does Hark a Vagrant. Johnny Ryan, who's a favorite of ours.
Yes, Johnny Ryan is the best.
Yeah, don't show those. If you look up Johnny Ryan, make sure your kids aren't around.
Yeah, don't look it up. Don't look him up at work.
Yeah, yeah. Johnny Ryan is definitely NSFW.
What does that stand for?
Not safe for work.
Oh.
I was going to make a joke, but I couldn't think of one, so I just said what it really stands for.
Yeah.
But the Small Press Expo is doing a really cool thing this year, and basically they're collaborating with the Library of Congress.
This is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to read this here. The Library of Congress will work with the Small Press Expo to select and solicit artworks and items to go into the collection, which is the Small Press Expo collection. All previous IGNATS winners, which is the festival prize at the show, will be included, and then what's going to happen is also people from SPX are going to pick, you know, sort of outstanding works from each year, and they're all going to get enshrined and archived in the Library of Congress.
That's pretty awesome.
I feel like a pretty big thing for comics.
That's definitely really big, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a little more information on the webpage for Small Press Expo. That's spxpo.com. And if you guys are interested, you should check it out.
It's going to be awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was all the news this week. Was there any other news? I'm sure there maybe something important happened.
Yeah, there's a new picture of underwearless Superman from the new movie.
Oh, that's yeah. About it. It was really bad.
Yeah, I don't know.
Now, do you think he's not wearing any underwear because it's sort of in keeping with the new 52?
Maybe.
Maybe they're going to CGI underwear on later.
I hope so.
Yeah, yeah. They have that technology now. But anyway, yeah, that picture was bad. We talked about the other Superman picture. I'm not very excited about this movie.
Yeah, we'll see, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see, you know. So I guess we're going to go ahead. We're just going to move right into viewer mail.
All right.
Yeah, this podcast going to be like 10 minutes long?
Hit me.
Hit me. All right, so the viewer mail this week is from a familiar name, Jessica.
Oh, she's back.
She's back. Yeah, yeah. She stayed away for a little while, but here's what she had to say. She says, "Hello, podcast. I know I haven't emailed in a while, but it seemed like you have been getting along quite well without me. It's true. We missed you, though." But, and that's all in caps, so I'm going to emphasize that. "I just saw a thing that made me think right now would be a good time to break the silence." Yeah, it's probably... So here's the thing I saw. Here is a link, but she describes what it is. It's a video of Ryan Gosling breaking up a fight in the street over some artwork. There's a question mark, but I think that's what was going on. You just watched the video. That's what it seemed like, right? So here's an idea of something to discuss on the podcast. Real-life superheroes. Let's just talk about real-life superheroes for a minute. Because this is a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
There's like a superhero database.
Yeah.
And there was just a documentary that came out about these guys.
Yeah, recently somebody told me that there's a DC one, but I can't remember what his name was, but... He apparently goes around the metro stations and
I think his name is the serial butt stabber.
Oh, yeah, yeah. he's my hero.
He's the supervillain that sort of this superhero was born. Like his mother and father were stabbed in the butt when he was a small child.
Yeah.
And
have they caught that guy yet?
I don't think they've caught him. They never will.
And they never will.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sneaky that way. So, yeah. How do you feel about real life superheroes?
I have no idea how I feel about it. For most part, I feel like it's just kind of a weird fantasy that they may be taking it a little too far and one of the dudes might get killed or something. But I mean, whatever, if they want to do it, you know, it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool that there's like a guy out there that's doing, most of them are doing like really like the easy stuff. They're like helping old ladies carry their groceries or not actually fighting like things.
Yeah, they're like cleaning up parks and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But you've got to imagine that eventually one of these guys is gonna die.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's gonna come to national attention. Well, there was the guy Phoenix Jones, is that his name, the guy in Seattle, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And didn't he get beat up?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So that was like the first time I think anybody really, there was like a big story about this stuff.
Yeah,
but I know there are like at least dozens of superheroes who are active around the country.
I'm waiting for one, like Punisher one, to show up. Then it'll be like in the news like crazy. It's like some guy dressed like a hero is just like shooting like criminals.
That's just like a serial killer.
Yeah, yeah. But except he's killing criminals.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think anybody will be okay with that.
No, no. But I'm saying that's when it'll be like in the headlines.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Or when one of them tries to like fly or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that will not be good. But so, yeah, so real life superheroes, it's a very strange thing, but I haven't actually seen this documentary, Superheroes. I saw a little clip from it, which was a guy who dresses like a superhero. He patrols around. He's really obsessed with the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so...
Does he have a Zord?
I don't think he has a Zord. Where would you keep a Zord? If somebody had a Zord and they parked it on the street, it would get stolen like the first night. I would steal it.
No, man, it's got camouflage.
Well, it is a Mega Zord.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's mega powerful. All right, so here's her question. This just keeps going. This is the longest email I've ever seen in my entire life. So here's some speculation. She wants to hear some speculation as to when the mythological adventures of Ryan Gosling will be made into a comic. Well, that was pretty easy. I'm going to go with never.
I'm going to go with maybe I should just do that right now.
Or I'm surprised there's not like a manga of The Notebook, though.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like they like to make manga of like novels that teen girls like. There's like a Twilight manga.
There is.
And there is like all those James Patterson, like Maximum Ride and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we should make a Notebook comic.
It'd be really boring.
So, but like what kind of superhero do you think Ryan Gosling would be? Just like a sexy one.
Yeah, yeah.
Like super sexy.
Yeah. He would be stealing women's hearts. I guess like, heroes don't steal stuff.
Yeah, so I think the consensus here is that Ryan Gosling would be a super villain.
Yeah, yeah.
And he would steal women's hearts, but literally.
He'd be the heartbreaker.
He would steal them out of their chests.
Yeah, yeah.
And they would die.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
And
then the world will long for real superheroes.
Somebody. He lures them in by like, you know, making them watch like The Notebook, and they're like, oh, he's so nice. And then they're like, oh, Ryan Gosling, can I get your... pulls out their heart, and then that's how he does it, right?
Yeah, yeah, and he like shows them his abs. And
as they're dying, he's like, check out these abs.
And then the most important part of this is Young Hercules. How is it still relevant to our lives?
Wait, what?
You know Young Hercules. It was a spinoff of the Hercules show.
Oh, I figured it's something.
And it was about Hercules when he was young. It's all there in the name.
That makes sense, yeah. It's like Young Indiana Jones.
It's like Young Indiana Jones. It is. But do you not remember Young Hercules?
No, not at all.
Oh, well, I think it lasted one season.
Oh.
But it was like one of those like syndicated seasons. So it was like 7,000 episodes.
Was he still played by Kevin Sorbo?
No, it was played by Ryan Gosling.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's why it's relevant.
Yeah,
oh,
okay. That's why it's relevant.
I was like, what?
Oh, yeah, no, this isn't just like a random third question.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, Jessica's off her meds again.
So I guess for Nick, the answer to how is Young Hercules still relevant, it's that it's not, because he's never even heard of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's relevant in a lot of ways. I don't really want to go into it, just because...
You're lying.
That's yeah, why. Yeah. Basically, I wrote a book about it. You can buy it on the Kindle for 99 cents, and it's 10,000 pages long.
So the adventures of Kevin and Young Hercules.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's good stuff. But so besides that, she just says that she hopes things are well. Friends. She still calls us friends after all the abuse that we've lobbed at her over the weeks. But
is friend spelled with a Z?
No, it's not. It's yeah, yeah. But she says she's still our biggest fan, which is nice. It's nice to have fans.
Nice.
And it says Jessica at the end. That's her name. So if you guys have questions, as always, you can email them to the podcast at Big Planet Comics, and we'll read them on the air.
Yeah, probably.
It's always a fun part of the show. All right, so let's get into some of these reviews. There are a lot of books this week.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer it's time for reviews.
All right, so we missed last week, so we're gonna go through a lot of last week's books, and then we're gonna go through a bunch of this week's books, and then at the end we're gonna talk about Flashpoint 5 and Justice League.
All right.
So let's start out with Amulet 4, The Last Council. This is by Kazuo Kibuishi. This is the fourth volume in this kid series. It's like an adventure series, I'd say, like in the vein of Bone.
Yeah.
Can you kind of break down for people what Amulet's been about?
Oh, basically, it starts off with like a family, mother, father, son, daughter. They get in a car accident. The father dies, and the kids get transported to this crazy world. And they lose their mom. And the first book is about them trying to rescue their mom. And then they get wrapped up in this. Like the girl finds the amulet, and it starts giving her powers and kind of talking to her. And so they get wrapped up in this big conflict that's been going on in this magical land for like years. And It's awesome. There's talking animals, like giant slugs and airships and robots, and it's great.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, it's a very typical sort of hero's journey.
Yeah.
She gets kind of pulled into this adventure that she, you know, would have never expected. And it kind of builds and builds as it goes along. And this fourth volume is interesting. It has a kind of Ender's Game, Battle Royale, Hunger Games kind of feel to it part of it. And things aren't exactly as they seem.
Yeah.
But it's moving along great. It's I think it's a fantastic book. All the volumes have been really good. This is a fourth volume, so it's like you can't really talk too much about what's going on in it without spoiling other things. But Kazu Kibuishi, he did Copper, which is like another fun little adventure thing, and some stuff in the Flight anthologies.
Yeah, and he puts together the Flight stuff too, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think he might be an editor on Flight. Yeah. If we're wrong about that, just send us an email and correct us. But Amulet, it's the art's really loose and fun. It's a great kids comic, I'd say, for probably like 10, 11, 12 year olds.
Yeah.
Or, well, I say that, but I mean, I love it. So it's basically for everybody.
Yeah.
If you've got kids and they've sort of read all of Bone and they're looking for stuff to read, Amulet's a great thing to move on to.
It's also for kids that like kind of like would like that liked Harry Potter and stuff. They would probably be into this. It's very like kids with magic, but not like condescending. Like
right. It definitely isn't one of those books that sort of talks down to kids.
Yeah.
It seems like what like Kazu Kibuishi, like he writes a book that he would like to read, but it's also okay for kids.
Yeah, he's like, this would be really cool if there's robots and like,
yeah, there's like airships and like, you know, just all there's it's cool, and elves, and but it's and like Harry Potter, there's like, it's got a very nice like established world, and it's like very deep, and no, it's cool stuff. It's very good.
Definitely awesome.
Yeah, so definitely check that out. All right, moving on to a book. I don't know about this book. Kevin Smith's Bionic Man number one. This is written by Kevin. Well, the story is by Kevin Smith, and then it's co-written by Kevin Smith and Phil Hester, and the art's by Jonathan Lau. I wasn't a huge fan of this book. Basically, it's hard to judge it right now because this book's a lot of setup. But basically, the Bionic Man seems to be Hal Jordan in this comic, yeah, as
kinda,
far as I can tell.
Kind of very Hal Jordan-ish.
Yeah, he's sort of, you know, the cock of the walk.
Yeah, he's rash and reckless.
And he's a test pilot.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, I'll say I don't want to give too much away, but whatever, I don't care. Basically, all that happens in this book is he flies around and then he crashes.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's some talk of bionic arms. You know, this is kind of, it's a remake of like the $6 Million Man, I guess is what it was originally called.
Right.
But I think
they
changed the title because, you know, $6 million isn't as much as it used to be.
Yeah, yeah. Like a $6 Million Man would be pretty shabby right now.
Yeah, yeah. This would be like a $6 Billion Man.
Something. But then that's just silly.
Yeah, yeah, that's too much money.
Yeah, Bionic Man makes sense. I mean, the spinoff was the Bionic Woman and he was the Bionic Man.
Yeah.
But
it's a way better title.
I mean, I'm definitely going to read the second issue. This is such setup. I mean, it feels like the first 15 minutes of a movie or something like that. It certainly didn't blow me away.
He's not even bionic yet.
So. Yeah, he's not even bionic. At the end, I don't even think at the end he's bionic.
Yeah, this issue is just about a man, not a bionic man.
Yeah, yeah. It should have been called Kevin Smith's Man.
Kevin Smith's Dude.
Yeah, but then it would have been about Jason Mewes.
Test Pilot. Yeah, yeah.
It should have been called Hal Jordan, Test Pilot.
Hal Jordan, Test Pilot.
It should have been called Flashpoint, Hal Jordan. I don't even want to talk about Flashpoint, Hal Jordan. All right, so if you like Kevin Smith's stuff, it's weird because even if you like Kevin Smith's stuff, I don't feel like you get that like kind of snappy Kevin Smith dialogue in this. I didn't feel any of that.
Yeah, nobody goes to movies.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. Yeah, yeah. No, there is nary a Star Wars joke in the whole thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's not bad. I didn't think it was bad. It's just kind of like
it's very run of the mill.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's very middle of the road.
It might get better. I mean, once there's more bionic stuff going on.
Yeah, when the second issue comes out, we'll give it a read. If it's any better, we'll let you guys know.
Yeah.
moving on to a book that I thought was amazing. This is called Blackjacked and Pistol Whipped. Crime Does Not Pay. A little breakdown of what this is. Basically, Crime Does Not Pay was a true crime series that came out in the 40s through the 50s. It was edited by these guys, Charles Biro and Bob Wood. It predates the EC, like crime stuff, like crime suspense stories and the kind of Tales from the Crypt things. Yeah. But it's very much in that vein. It's kind of like an exploitative crime. Like these stories are,
they're all like true crime stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's all true crime.
They're very lascivious.
But the kind of the hook of this book is that Bob Wood, who was one of the main artists on the book and who was a co-creator along with Charles Biro, committed a crime himself that is worthy of the pages of Crime Does Not Pay, and that he killed this woman in a hotel room with an iron.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it bashed her brains in.
Yeah, and that's the cover of the book. It's like him killing her, which is pretty macabre, I guess. But I feel like they can kind of get away with that because it's in keeping with the tone of the rest of the book. It's
that's
like,
what he did.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. So a lot of the Golden Age stuff like this is really tough to read. But I'll say one thing about Crime Does Not Pay. I feel like the stories are very readable.
Yeah.
The writer, Charles Biro, seems to be kind of ahead of his time in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's like cursing in this. I mean, there's not cursing. There's a lot of little ampersands and stuff like that. But
yeah, yeah. And it's got a really great introduction by Brian Azzarello, who's obviously a talented crime writer who writes 100 Bullets. And it's all put together by Dennis Kitchen and some other guys. And it's just a really cool book. If you're into that kind of EC Comics, old comics collection stuff. Yeah, it's very cool.
It's really cool. The story I read is about the guy who created the silencer. I didn't read a lot of it, but that one was pretty cool. And I guess there's a guy called Mr. Crime that's in all the stories.
Oh, yeah, we should talk about Mr. Crime. Basically, Mr. Crime is like...
it's like the Crypt Keeper, sort of.
Yeah, well, what did you call him?
The Crime Keeper.
The Crime Keeper. He's like, he's this narrator who predates, the old witch and the Crypt Keeper and stuff. And yeah, he's hilarious.
It's weird because he doesn't just introduce the stories, he's like in them. Like in the one with the guy with the silencer, he's like, oh, here's my chance to put some evil into this guy. And he's whispering in his ear, like, steal the money. And the guy's like, I should steal money. And then he's getting joy out of watching this guy commit crime. And then it's really weird, but it's awesome.
Well, yeah, because as opposed to a lot of the, crime comics are huge right now. I feel like there are these Vertigo crime books, and there's this book, The Rinse, that we're going to talk about in a little bit, and Criminal, and just a lot of crime books, Stumptown, and then the newer books, they tend to be sort of detached and maybe not have a point of view about these things. They're just sort of more journalistic.
Yeah.
But I feel like back in the day, in the 40s and the early 50s, you had to show that, that crime does not pay. You had to have a moral at the end. So Mr. Crime is very much the guy that's like, and then he died in prison.
yeah.
And it's kind of messed up, but it's kind of fun in a way too.
It's like he got what was coming to him. Two bullets in the brain.
Yeah. It's this weirdly moralistic stuff, like the old Fletcher Hanks comics. I shall destroy all civilized worlds. Is that what that thing's
Planets?
Called? Yeah. Where the main character in that, Stardust, is just like deals these really intense punishments to these people and seems to get a lot of joy out of it. So people like to moralize back then. Well, I guess they still do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But all right. So I would say I would recommend this book to anybody who's a fan of, like I said, EC Comics and anybody who's interested in the sort of history of crime comics. I feel like it's a very cool book.
They're all true stories, so they're kind of interesting.
In that way, too. Yeah, yeah, definitely. The one of the ones I read was about a sort of Jim Jones type character who was a religious cult leader who gathered all these women up and basically got shot in the head.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty nuts. So, all right, so moving on, let's... I do want to say there was a book called Infinite Kung Fu that came out by a guy, Kagan McLeod. I read a little bit of it. Nick read a little bit of it. I want to wait till Jared's here next week and we've all got a chance to read the whole thing. But
yeah, it's like 600 pages long. It's really...
Yeah, it's a huge book, but so far it's amazing. We'll talk about it more next week,
though. It's great, yeah.
Yeah. So another thing I want to talk about is this one's a big surprise for me. It's the Planet of the Apes trade.
Yeah.
This is a series by Daryl Gregory and it's drawn by Carlos Magno. Well, you're fresh off reading this. I read the issues as they came out, but you just read this trade. Why don't you tell people what it's about?
Oh, it's it takes place. I guess it's like a.
It's 1,000 years before the first Planet of the Apes.
1,000 years before the movies, and it's at a time where kind of the humans and apes kind of live together. The apes are still kind of in charge. They're like the royalty of the world, and then the humans are kind of just like the lowly street people, and they have their own kind of separate town a little bit, but they all live kind of. They interact together, and basically there's kind of the beginnings of a revolution happening where some of the humans start kind of the very beginning of this starts with a higher up ape getting assassinated and by a human, obviously, because it was obvious that it was a human. And then there's an investigation and you get kind of into the world and you see how the humans live and how they interact with the apes. And it gets pretty crazy. It's really good.
Yeah. It's weird. It's very smart. I want to say for a Planet of the Apes comic, The guy, Daryl Gregory, that's writing it, he's been writing this Dracula Company of Monsters series, which is, I think, one of the most underrated books coming out right now. Yeah, really nobody good. Reads it, but it's really great. There's a lot of political stuff in it, like political stuff between the humans and the apes, which is really interesting.
Definitely.
And it's a very good murder mystery too. It's like you don't know and who's doing it. And there's sort of these different separatist movements inside of the ape camp and the human camp, and then you wonder if it's like an inside job a little bit. And it's very cool. And they're using like archaic weapons, but they have like M16s and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the art in it by this guy, Carlos Magno, I don't know his work, but it's incredible.
I remember him. I recognize his name from something. I can't remember what, but yeah, it's great. It's really good.
It's very detailed. It reminds me of Frank Quitely a little bit.
A little Steve McNiven.
Yeah, I can see a little Steve McNiven, and it even has elements of somebody like John Severin.
Yeah.
Who is like an older artist that did some like Western comics and things like that. But the art's amazing. And I will say one thing about this book. It's the first four issues of the Planet of the Apes series, and it's $10.
Yeah.
And so what they did, they made that $10, and they made issue 5 that also came out this week, $1.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in Planet of the Apes at all, I haven't actually seen the new movie. I've heard a lot of good things about it.
It's great. I loved it. Yeah.
But I'm a huge fan of the old movies, even the terrible old movies. But I will admit that, you know, the third, fourth, and fifth movies are pretty stinky. Yeah, we were talking about it. I actually really like the second Beneath the Planet of the Apes movie.
No, not me.
Yeah, you were saying you thought it was terrible.
I love the ending. The ending's amazing.
And that's fair. But I will say that this is probably better written than any of the Planet of the Apes movie beyond the first one.
Beyond the first one. The first one's great.
Yeah, the first one's great. And the novel's great, too. The Pierre Boulez novel. That's also the guy that wrote Bridge Over the River Kwai, which I don't think a lot of people know that. The guy that wrote Bridge Over the River Kwai also wrote Planet of the Apes.
Nice.
Which I always thought was pretty interesting. For $10, I mean, you can't go wrong. And if you're already reading this and you like it, check out Dracula Company of Monsters, people.
Do it, people.
Do it, people. Do it for me.
Yeah. Don't get turned off by Dracula.
It's great. Everybody I know who's read Dracula Company of Monsters loves it. But that's only like 5 people.
Yeah, it took me a while too, because I was like, oh, a Dracula comic, this is gonna be awful.
Yeah. No, I mean I think that's a reasonable reaction to have.
But and I think that's kind of what the problem is. And also they've had misleading covers where Dracula's on the cover, but he looks like Dracula from like the old Dracula movies.
Yeah, it looks like Bela Lugosi.
He looks nothing like that in the comic.
Yeah. So yeah, the Planet of the Apes comic, highly recommended.
Yes. I went ape over it.
No, yeah, I want ape. I went totally bananas over this comic. Yeah. So don't be a chimp by this.
Don't be a chimp.
That's not even a thing that people say. Is it a pun if it's not even a thing that people anyway? So let's move on. Let's talk about the new Ultimate books. No, actually, yeah, let's talk about the new Ultimate books. Let's start with Ultimate Comics Ultimates. This was by Jonathan Hickman and Esad Ribic.
Ultimate.
I read this and it was so dense that I honestly couldn't even tell people what it's about. But so Nick, I'm going to leave this up to you. Why don't you explain to people what Ultimate Comics Ultimates was about?
So many Ultimates, but
it is. That's at least twice as many Ultimates as you need.
Well, ultimately, what happened? This issue it's kind of like a sort of a setup issue, but it also kind of drops you in the middle of everything. It's basically Nick Fury is back in charge of the Ultimates, and he's the Ultimates have become kind of more of a global organization where they have like the, what is their headquarters called? The Triskelion or whatever.
Yeah.
And they have one in like countries all over the world, and they have different heroes in different parts of the world. And Nick Fury's kind of watching this giant screen trying to coordinate all these different things going on. Like Hawkeye's in one place, like Iron Man's in another place, and they're all kind of fighting. And then, that's pretty much all that happened. Like, it's just like you see a little bit of Iron Man fighting something, and then you see Hawkeye fighting some elves, and then Nick Fury's just kind of telling them what to do. And then it just kind of ends. there's no like real story yet. It's just kind
of. But that was my problem with it. It seemed like there was an attempt to sort of insert a lot of really small story elements that I'm assuming are going to be bigger things later on.
Yeah.
But they were all just seeds, and I wasn't really. There wasn't enough of each story element that I could get interested in.
It's really fast too. It's like this happens, bam, 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 bam. Just like it's like a rocket, like rockets you to the end, and at the end you're like, wait, this is over.
And I will say that's a problem that I do have with Hickman books sometimes, is that when they start, they're so full of basically he wants to barf out all of his ideas that he's going to build on as time goes on, and they're going to be really coherent as the story goes on. I mean, he kind of did the same thing in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, even Red Wing recently, like the first issue is pretty good, but there's a lot of stuff going on, and the second issue is great. He settles in and starts getting into the story. Same thing with S.H.I.E.L.D. too, like you were saying, like the first six issues are just like, here's this character, here's that character, here's this character. And then now he's just kind of telling the story.
And I will say, I mean, this is one of the other book that's a part of the new Ultimate launch that just started is Ultimate Comics Hawkeye. And this is also by Hickman. And the art in this is by Rafa Sandoval. But I will say the Hawkeye thing is a small part of the story in
Ultimates. Yeah.
But then in the Hawkeye thing, because he's just focusing on that one part of the story, I thought it was immensely more readable and incredible.
It's more focused, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I thought for me it was a very cool story. I don't want to give too much away about it, but it seems like they're sort of trying to mirror things that happen in House of M, but take a different approach to them.
Yeah, and also it's in keeping with the Ultimates because it's like, you know, this all takes place in China, and so it's like it's showing a little bit more of what the Ultimates are doing around the world as opposed to just being in the U.S. and fighting whatever is there, you know. It's like showing them being more proactive and kind of trying to stop threats around the world.
I will say so far, I think that this new Ultimate relaunch is much stronger than when they relaunched Ultimates the last time.
Oh, after Ultimatum, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. After Ultimatum. I think Ultimatum, if you guys didn't read Ultimatum, it was a miniseries by Jeff Loeb where I don't know what they told Jeff Loeb he could do. Just basically do whatever he wants. But he killed almost everybody in the Ultimate Universe. Yeah. It seemed like everything that came after it, people were just scrambling, trying to rebuild. This feels more like they told Hickman, hey, we have this universe. We're going to kind of start from scratch a little bit, but just tell a story that you want
to
tell.
Yeah, and try to separate a little bit from the Marvel. Like, they want to, you know, have a different tone. And since they can do anything they want, they're like, you know, pretty much do whatever you want and like make it different.
Right. And the people they have working on these new books are great. I mean, Bendis is still writing Ultimate Spider-Man, and we'll probably talk a lot about that when it comes out, because that's going to be really interesting with the new Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And Hickman's writing both of these books, and Nick Spencer who's writing Ultimate X-Men.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're definitely moving some top talent onto this. I feel like Mark Miller has kind of been phoning in his Ultimate stuff recently, so I'm kind of glad that he's out of the picture on this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've never been a huge Ultimate fan. It always seems superfluous to me. I love the first two Ultimates series that Mark Miller did with Brian Hitch.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'd say this one is one worth looking into, especially if you're a Jonathan Hickman fan. I mean, yeah. This is very much like Hickman's big ideas all, you know, crammed together.
Yeah, yeah.
A little too much at the beginning, but it's like we talked about. It'll all pan out at the end, and, yeah, he does good stuff. All right, so let's talk about another Marvel thing that came out this week. The Uncanny X-Force trade.
Yes. Awesome.
Yeah, awesome. Anyway, this is called Apocalypse Solution. It's written by Rick Remender with art, amazing art by Jerome Pena. We'll talk about it a lot. But the basic plot of this is Apocalypse is reborn.
As a kid.
There are new... I don't know a lot about X-Men, but basically there are new four horsemen of the apocalypse who are his apocalypse's sort of disciples, I guess.
Yeah.
And there's this X-Force team that's comprised of Wolverine, Phantom X, Deadpool. Psylocke, Deadpool, and
Angel.
Yeah. And.
Or Archangel.
Yeah. And there's just something about this book. I'm not a big X-Men guy, but I've been really liking Schism. But I don't have that sort of X-Men history that a lot of people do. I wasn't reading all those Scott Lobdell X-Men comics. I've never read Age of Apocalypse.
Yeah.
You
don't need to, really.
But the thing with Uncanny X-Force is it's so readable. You can just jump right in and read it.
Yeah.
The storyline is fantastic. I don't want to give, you know, the ending of it is, I will say, incredible.
Yeah, and it's cool because there's kind of like an ending to the story in this trade, but then a lot of the elements continue and there's like a bigger story at play, and then it started playing out.
This is definitely the first volume of what has become a much larger story. But I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of stuff to say about this book. I'll start with Jerome Pena's art. Jerome Pena is a guy, the first thing I saw from him was Fear Agent. And basically, in his issues of Fear Agent, he was sort of aping Tony Moore a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
But it was good.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Uncanny X-Force number one comes out. And Jerome Pena's art is, like, out of this world.
This is definitely, probably, yeah, no, it's definitely the best, like, superhero art.
I think Jerome Pena's art on this is probably, yeah, the best superhero art I've seen in a long time. I would say it rivals sort of, like, humanoids, the sort of European guys that do the humanoids comics.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a guy like Travis Charé, who also did humanoid stuff but used to draw Wildcats back in the day. It's super detailed, but it also has so much personality at the same time, and it's a lot of times it's hard to pull off both of those things together.
I remember him from a little earlier. He did that comic Alone. Do you remember that?
Oh, I barely remember that.
Yeah, it's great. It's awesome. It's got, like, cybernetic bears, and it's about, like, a gunman. Like, it's a kind of cowboyish, but he's in, like, kind of a weird Mad Max type world. But it's awesome too.
But the great thing about Uncanny X-Force is it sort of exists on its own. It's very morally ambiguous, and Deadpool's okay. I like
he's actually funny in this.
Yeah, but that's what I'm gonna say. Deadpool is actually hilarious in this comic.
Yeah.
Rick Remender, I should say, wrote Fear Agent. He wrote Sea of Red. He wrote the very much underrated Frankencastle,
which was awesome
thing where Frank Castle turns into Frankenstein. Which basically, by saying that, people are just gonna write off anything I have to say about this.
Yeah, it's awesome,
but it's incredible, and you guys need to get a sense of humor.
Yeah,
but yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm gushing, but yeah. Uncanny X-Force is incredible. Just buy this.
It's
awesome. If you're interested in X-Men at all, or even if you're not, like I said, I don't read a lot of X-Men stuff. I love Grant Morrison's new X-Men run, particularly the Quietly issues. I love Joss Whedon's Astonishing X-Men, and I love this.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Good stuff.
It's great.
Let's talk about a comic now that I did not love.
Uh-oh.
Let's talk about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles relaunch.
You're so excited about it.
I was so excited about it. We don't actually have the comic here. We just remembered that we needed to talk about it last minute. So I don't know. I know Kevin Eastman co-wrote it.
And he did the layouts.
Have you
seen his layouts? They're awesome.
Are they awesome?
They look like his old art.
Do they look better?
I was like, why didn't he just draw it?
Yeah, do they look better? Why didn't somebody just ink his layouts then?
Yeah.
Anyway, basically, I was so excited about this Ninja Turtles relaunch. I'm a Ninja Turtles loser. is that a thing that you call a fan of something?
No, you call them awesome. I love Ninja Turtles too.
I love the Ninja Turtles. I particularly love... I liked the cartoon when I was little, but particularly I was in love with the black and white Mirage comics that sort of started the whole thing off. And
they taught me to eat pizza.
They taught me that to cowabunga.
To cowabunga.
Yeah, to cowabunga. But so I was very excited about this because Kevin Eastman, who is, of course, one of the creators of the Ninja Turtles along with Peter Laird, was working on Ninja Turtles again. Basically, Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird sold the Ninja Turtles. And then Kevin Eastman came back and decided to start working on this again, which I thought was a very strange thing.
Yeah.
But,
and they're still owned by somebody else, right? He doesn't actually own them.
Yeah, no, he doesn't own them. He sold them and he's rich.
Yeah.
He's really rich.
But, yeah, he's rich.
But anyway, okay, let's actually get into what this comic is. So basically, instead of just doing a new Ninja Turtles comic that picks up where, God, I'm so nerdy about the Ninja Turtles. I'm like, that picks up where the City of War storyline ended. What they decided to do was they decided to reimagine the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
So all these sort of classic elements of the Ninja Turtles that people remember, they don't exist anymore in this.
Well, not completely. I mean, the turtles in general are exactly like they were in the comic.
Yes,
like,
yes. I was, yeah, yeah. Well, the name of the comic is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, so you have to keep that element that they're Teenage Mutant
Ninja Turtles. No, but their personalities are pretty much the same. The main difference, I think, is in how they come together, which I think
basically what happens in this, I mean, you guys, I'm assuming that people that are at all interested in what we have to say about this kind of know the basic Ninja Turtles story. But in this one, it's that there's a science lab that's, I guess, run by General Krang. Krang is not an alien.
And Baxter Stockman's there.
And Baxter Stockman, who's, anyway... So, and April O'Neil's a lab assistant. She's not a reporter. The Ninja Turtles were not hit with the mutagen that is the same stuff that blinded Daredevil.
Well, we don't completely know yet, right?
Well, hold on. In the original comic, It was the original Ninja Turtles was a parody of Frank Miller comics.
Yeah.
The cover looked just like Ronin, and the turtles were mutated by the same chemical that blinded Daredevil.
Yeah.
In this comic, they're like grown in a lab, basically. And Splinter, as opposed to being like a Rokusaki's rat or whatever, is called Splinter because he's a genetic mutation that splinters his animal half and his human half.
Yeah, that was kind of lame.
Oh, kind of lame. And Casey Jones is a teenager that's being abused by his father. I don't want to talk about this comic anymore. It really made me mad.
I liked it a little more than you. The changes don't bother me too much, but some of them are definitely bad. Like the Casey Jones thing is pretty bad, and the Splinter thing is really weird. And but it's not quite over yet, so I'm not sure exactly. Like maybe there'll still be like, where did we find this rat? Oh, we found him in the sewers because he was being trained by like Rokusai. You know, I don't know. It's kind of early to like, but also. And also, we don't quite know how the turtles get mutated or whatever.
Look, those things wouldn't matter to me so much. I don't want to be one of those guys who's like, oh, this isn't like it used to be, and so it makes me mad. Like, I don't like that attitude towards things. But I also feel like this isn't very well executed. So for me, the combination of the two things is really off-putting.
I like the half of it, because half of it was like the turtles now, and they're like Raphael's not with them, and they're like kind of looking for him, and they're kind of have the same personality, and they're fighting like a cat karate cat thing, like right. A guy, and then like they're kind of like similar. Like for the first half, it felt exactly like one of the old Ninja Turtle comics.
I just want to say it's really funny that you're like, it is good because they're fighting a karate cat.
Well, it's like a cat, like anthropomorphic cat.
No, it's
dude.
A karate cat. It's like,
but that's what they had in the old comics.
It's too. Like the cats from Heathcliff, like they the fought, ones like, that live in the in the dump or whatever.
But that's what they fought in the old comics, and they fought Triceratops and stuff. But anyway, the first half is almost pretty much exactly like an old. But yeah, definitely the second half is all kind of like flashing back to the origin a little bit, and then it's like completely weird. And like the changes just seem unnecessary most of the time, but
I think we're giving a little too much time to this Ninja Turtles comic. I think basically, if I wasn't working at the store and I didn't get to read this for free, I would have bought this Ninja Turtles comic, and I didn't like it, but I also would buy the next issue.
I'll definitely read it. I'll keep reading
it. I'm gonna keep reading it, and we'll keep you guys updated, let everybody know how it goes. I think that once we get past this initial phase, it's gonna get a little bit better.
But
we've given way too much time. We have so much other stuff to talk about that we cannot talk about this Ninja Turtles comic anymore.
I really want to eat some pizza right now.
I definitely want a cowabunga right now. So let's see, what else do we have on here? Let's talk about The Rinse number one. Let's move on to something that was actually really amazing. So this is a comic by Gary Phillips, written by Gary Phillips, who's the guy that wrote Cowboys, which we talked about a few episodes ago, I think. The art's by Mark Lamming, who's a guy I don't know, but the art in this was fantastic. Let's do the thing I always do. Hey, Nick, why don't you tell people what The Rinse was about?
The Rinse is about The Rinse. The Rinse is like basically what the it's like the main character in this is like the guy who gets rid of money, like stolen money or whatever, like money that needs to be spread out.
Yeah, he launders money.
He rinses it. He takes a different. Anyway, it explains in the comic like how it's done and all that, and then somebody comes to him with he's like, I got all this money from a casino from a mob boss, and he's like, I don't think they're after me, but maybe they are. And then he's like, oh, I don't know if I want to take this, but there's lots of money involved. So he takes it, and obviously stuff starts getting bad, and then it's good.
And that's the basic gist of it. And it's just really well done. I mean, that's the thing that stood out for me on this comic. It's so readable. The art is really clearly rendered. I feel like it reminds me of Chris Samnee a little bit, and that's what you were saying.
A lot like Chris Samnee.
Yeah, it's a lot like Chris Samnee. It's a little crisper than Chris Samnee, though.
It's a little less cartoony.
And actually, it reminds me a lot of, we'll talk about this other comic, but it reminds me a lot of Jonathan Case's art in Green River Killer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but this is a first issue. It was a dollar, which is also awesome.
Yes.
There's not a lot to say about it, except it's really good.
There's worse things to spend a dollar on.
Yeah, exactly. So check this out. If you're a fan of crime comics, if you like Criminal, then read this.
Yeah. Crime does not pay, though.
Yeah, I'm going to cut out that part when I cough. So, Yeah, so speaking of Green River Killer, let's talk about that.
Yes.
Let's talk about it forever.
That was definitely the best thing that came out this week.
Green River Killer is easily the best comic that came out this week.
This month.
Besides potentially Infinite Kung Fu, which we're going to talk about next week. But this is Green River Killer, a true detective story. This was a hardcover that came out. This is written by Jeff Jensen, who's a guy that he writes for Entertainment Weekly. It's drawn by Jonathan Case, who did a comic called Dear Creature, which I've never read. But the interesting thing is Jeff Jensen is the son of the detective that worked on this Green River Killer case.
Yeah.
And this comic is told from the point of view, not from the point of view of, but basically it's about the detective who's trying to find this person who murdered all these women.
Yeah.
I think it was in New Jersey, right?
I think so.
Yeah, anyway. But and the story's told over 25 years.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting. It's so well told. It's a lot like if you've ever seen the David Fincher
Zodiac movie
that came out a few years ago. That was less about the Zodiac killer and more about what sort of an investigation of somebody like that can do to somebody. And like the Zodiac movie, it takes place over all these years, and
it's cool. It flashes back. Like, it starts off with
The opening scene in this comic is, like, so affecting, and it's just so
brutal.
It's
really creepy, and, and then, it shows, you know, the murders beginning, and then it immediately flashed to, like, 2003, right? Where they're like, oh, we got the killer, he's about to write a confession. And so it flashes back and forth between, like, him investigating the murders and them talking to the killer and him... You know, and they're like not sure if he's the killer or not, and then it gets deeper into like why did he do this and why is this happening, and it's so good.
One of the way that the main detective is portrayed is fantastic. He's sort of a tough guy and he kind of buries things deep inside and he doesn't like to deal with things. But the thing that really stood out to me about this book is the way that the killer is portrayed.
Yeah,
because. Basically, this investigation, when they finally get to the point of actually questioning this guy, it's, you know, 20 years later.
Yeah.
And he's somewhat of an old man.
Yeah.
And
he's married.
He's married and he feels, you know, it's like he's kind of buried these things deep inside of him and he doesn't, you know, it's not really a part of his life anymore.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting. It's such an interesting character study of these two different guys and how they're sort of at the same point in their lives, but how they deal with things very differently. It's so much more than just like a crime book. It's easily the best book that came out this week. I do think it could potentially be the best graphic novel of the year.
Yeah, it's really good. It works on so many different levels. Like everything with the killer, like you almost kind of like him. He's like. I mean, he did awful, terrible things, and he's not, you know, but, like, in this, he's, like...
He's a little doofy.
He's a little goofy, and, like, he's, like, oh, I have trouble with women, and, like, you know, I just want people to love me, and, like, he seems really nice, but then, like...
But then, as the story unfolds, of course, you see all the horrible things that he's done.
Yeah, yeah, and then I didn't know all of this stuff, and it gets worse later on, and I was like, oh,
It gets much worse. There's definitely a point in the book where you sort of question the way that you feel about... this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird because you know that he's a murderer.
Yeah.
But you sort of, it's
he's in the book a lot, so you kind of like get to know him a little bit, which is, it's weird.
Yeah. You get to know him. He has all these sort of little quirky things, and he doesn't come across as a sociopath, which is really interesting because that's kind of, that sort of detachment isn't there. He's detached from the crimes he's committed, but he's not really detached from life. I don't know. There's so much going on in this book.
Yeah.
Basically, if you like crime books, read this. Just read this.
Even if you really know this story and you've seen, you know, there was a TV movie that apparently was supposed to be good that's about it. If you know everything about this, you really don't. And then it's cool because. It's actually written by the detective's son, which is kind of amazing. I didn't actually know that until after I read it, but yeah, it's great.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. It's easily the best thing that came out this week. Definitely check it out. Green River Killer, the true detective story by Jeff Jensen and Jonathan Case. It's fantastic. Okay, so we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about Flashpoint 5 and Justice League number 1. We'll see you guys in a minute. All right, so we're back. We're going to talk about two of the biggest books that came out this week. And if you guys haven't read these, you might not want to listen to this part. We're going to get a little spoilery.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like Batgirl. Yeah. So we're going to talk about Flashpoint number 5. We're going to talk about Justice League number 1. So let's start with Flashpoint 5. What, Nick, you've read the whole Flashpoint miniseries, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you give people just an overview of what Flashpoint has been about?
Well, Flash wakes up and everything's changed. His mom's alive. Batman is not Bruce Wayne. This is his dad. Basically, somebody has changed the timeline, and Flash is trying to fix it. And kind of the thing is, like, running through this is, like, you know, we all know, you know, it's going to lead into the new 52. And so, you know, Flash is like, oh, I have to go back and change the timeline and fix everything. But clearly, you know, he's not going to succeed, or he's going to not completely succeed.
Yeah, we all knew that we were going to end up with a different universe because of this. And that's basically what happens in this. I guess the little twist in here is that instead of it being because of what Reverse Flash did, it's actually sort of Barry Allen's fault that the universe has been changed into this terrible universe. I was not a huge fan of this issue. It seemed like the sort of last gasp of the really overly complicated DC universe.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of exposition in here.
Yeah.
A lot of explaining why the universe is going to be different as opposed to actually telling a story.
Yeah. And it doesn't completely make sense either.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of makes, but it makes sense in that way that they make it make sense as opposed to it actually making sense.
Yeah. There's a weird thing at the end where, like, the Flash is, like, running through the time stream trying to fix stuff. And then, like, there's some weird floating head that it's never identified what or who that is. Maybe some old DC fans know who it is. I have no idea.
Yeah, if you guys know who it is, let us know.
But he's like, it's like there's three timelines and you need to merge them into one to fix things. And you're like, wait, what? Like, it looks like the three timelines are like the Vertigo, Wildstorm, and regular DCU. And
yeah, and it's weird because these three timelines already seem like they're kind of merged in the Flashpoint universe.
Yeah.
So I don't understand how it's really making anything different. But basically, I feel like it just ends up that Flashpoint was just a big excuse, basically, to start Justice League.
Yeah,
and the new DCU.
I feel like this actual story was planned before the relaunch was planned.
I definitely think that's true.
Because I feel like at the end, it was just supposed to be like what it is. Like the Flash is like goes back in time, and he's like, I guess I can't save my mother or whatever. And then the timeline was supposed to go back to normal. But then they were like, well, why don't we just use this to change everything? And then that's what the end feels like. It's kind of like a little bit tacked on where it's just like, oh, yeah, well, you need to merge these timelines and everything will be kind of different.
Yeah, I will say that
I don't feel like that was the original ending.
As much as the first sort of 20 pages of this book are just a lot of exposition and just to like really over explaining what's going on, I feel like once Barry Allen wakes up in what is the new DC universe, there's some really great character stuff between him and Batman.
Yeah, yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, basically, Barry brings a note. In the Flashpoint universe, Thomas Wayne was Batman. And he brings Bruce Wayne, you know, Batman, a note from his father basically telling him that he loves him and stuff. And it's a cool character moment.
Yeah, it's cool. One of the weird parts is like Flash is like, he tells Batman what happened. And he's like, oh, I changed everything. And then Batman's like, but now everything's back to normal. And then Flash is like, as far as I can tell.
But it's cool. It's like,
he's like, no, not really.
It's cool. Batman's like, you're a good messenger, which is kind of like a little nod to the whole, you know, Mercury Flash thing. So yeah. I don't know. I thought the ending was very good, but overall I felt like this issue was kind of a mess.
Yeah. And the weird thing about this is it's not completely clear, but the Flash says that he remembers most everything. So I'm like, does he remember like the JSA? I'm like, does he remember like how the universe used to be? But I don't think he does. I think he just remembers. He remembers the Flashpoint universe, but I don't think he remembers. It's not clear. It doesn't seem like he remembers how the universe was, because he'd be like, I'm sure instantly he would be like, why are we wearing different costumes?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. Yeah, that part's very strange. To me, it seemed like he does remember the way the universe was, which is not a very good way to start off a new.
But he clearly doesn't, because like he would instantly be like, "Why are you wearing that costume? Why am I wearing this costume? Where is the JSA? Like, you know, all the, you know, everything's different."
Yeah,
he's like, well, "How come we've only known each other for 5 years?"
Yeah, I don't know. So, but basically, that I will say that's the end of the old DC universe. It's you can just kind of ignore it. Basically, the whole thing was to get us to Justice League number one.
Yeah,
and I actually really like Justice League number one.
I thought it was okay.
You just thought it was okay?
I thought it was pretty good. There's things I really liked about it, and there's a couple things I didn't like about it.
Yeah, I kind of want to just go through this whole issue and kind of talk about what's going on. So it starts out, and basically, it's the police, it seems like, are like hunting Batman.
Yeah.
And,
but Batman is also chasing somebody else.
Yeah, Batman's chasing somebody else. And it seems like when this starts, Batman is a superhero that, you know, is kind of an urban myth to a lot of people. To the point where when Green Lantern shows up at the beginning of this, he is like, oh, Batman, you're real?
Yeah.
Which is like, I don't know. But
it's a little weird coming from a space cop.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah, for him to be so incredulous. But but I will say this whole thing is, I guess, takes place like 3 years before the rest of the DC Universe.
5 years.
I think this is 3 years, and then Action Comics is 5 years.
Oh, it says 5 years in the beginning.
Oh, does it?
Okay. Yeah, it says 5 years ago.
So, but one thing I really like about this is it seems like these characters have a lot more personality than they've had in a lot of the DC books recently. One of my big complaints about DC is that, like, basically almost all the characters are just like 6'2" white guys with different haircuts that are all like good guys.
Yeah.
And in this, it's like Hal Jordan is very like
he's kind of a jerk.
He's really kind of a jerk, but I like that.
He also refers to himself as Green Lantern a lot.
Yeah, like sort of like the Rockwood. He's like he's like Green Lantern will take care of this.
Yeah,
and
which is good. Yeah, it's good. That's one of the things I liked about this book is the characterizations. Like the characters are slightly different, but they're different in a good way, and they have more personality. And another thing I really liked is that they changed the universe a little bit because like. For, you know, as long as I can remember, like, DC Universe, all the heroes are loved by, like, everybody on the planet. And this one, everybody's kind of terrified of them, and they think that they're going to kill everybody.
Right, which I think is a really interesting dynamic, and but it's something that DC definitely hasn't really done, and it's always been kind of a Marvel thing.
Yeah, definitely in Marvel, like, the heroes are kind of a little bit of outcasts.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm getting the sense of that in this, which I think is really interesting, and it should hopefully make the whole universe a little bit more interesting.
Also excited that the first villain seems to be Darkseid. Darkseid?
Yeah, which is very strange considering that DC went to great lengths to sort of get rid of the new gods just recently. Yeah. But it seems like they're back in this, which you know, I like.
That's
like
fine.
I like the new gods. I like the Jack Kirby creations. I mean, I think they're an important part of the DC universe and sort of gave the DC universe more personality than it had before then. Yeah, so basically they meet up and they're Green Lantern and Batman meet up. You know, they're kind of going back and forth. They have a sort of contentious relationship already, which I think is interesting. Yeah,
and they're following this what appears to be a parademon, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, I think so, which Apocalypse. Is like an Apocalypse demon from the whole Darkseid fourth world. And then it switches to a story about Cyborg basically being like a high school football star.
Yeah, yeah. He just pops up for a second,
which is you know, one thing I keep hearing people say is like, yeah, it's Justice League. It's seven of the most important heroes in the DC universe, and Cyborg. yeah, it's the Cyborg thing is, you know, it's a little small story. It doesn't seem to be a big part of what's going on right now, but I imagine it's going to tie in.
Yeah, I mean, he sees Green Lantern and Batman, like, fly over his head. He's like, what the hell?
Yeah, yeah. So, and he's not Cyborg yet, so.
No, yeah, clearly something terrible is going to happen to him. And
yeah, in a lot of ways, this reminds me of the Straczynski Thor storyline where they're kind of bringing together all the Asgardians.
Yeah, this is like getting the band together type
thing. They're kind of getting the band together in this.
And they're like, we're going to need help. Let's go find Superman.
Yeah, and Superman shows up at the end. And one thing I like about this is Superman seems like he's kind of a jerk a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he doesn't have any red pants on.
No underwear.
He's got no underwear. But, yeah, and he just shows up at the end. And then it seems like the next issue is going to focus a lot on whatever the new dynamic between Superman and Batman is.
Yeah.
And then I imagine Wonder Woman's going to show up, or Aquaman in the next issue. It's very much that still kind of getting the band together thing.
That's the one thing that I didn't like about this issue, as I felt that I think it's just kind of a weird choice to go with like an origin story that takes place in the past for the first storyline. Like, I feel like new readers who are coming to this book are like, I want to read a Justice League book. And so they're like, they want to see the Justice League in it. You know, they want to see like Superman, Batman, Green Lantern. They want to see all the characters on the cover, which only like three of them actually are in it. And they want to see them all kind of doing superhero stuff, which they kind of do in this, but it's just kind of like, it's mostly a Green Lantern and Batman story. And then Superman shows up at the end.
Well, see, I kind of disagree with that. I think it's a good way, you know, instead of shoving all that into the first issue, it's going to be over the first three issues or so. You're going to be able to, because they spend a lot of time on the characterization of these guys, which I think is a really important, hopefully Definitely, a really important yeah, part yeah. of this new DC universe. And I feel like if you had done, you know, if this had 20 characters in it, like most kind of big DC things yeah. do, you wouldn't have gotten a sense of anybody's, you know, motivation or yeah. like how they differ from one another. And I don't want another comic that's just a bunch of good guys.
Yeah,
know?
But see, I could feel like they could have done that stuff and make it like a double size issue maybe, and then have it like have all this stuff like slow build up and all this characterization, and then by the end of the double size issue, they're kind of like getting together and they're gonna like, you know.
Yeah, I was under the impression that this one was $4 because it's longer, but it doesn't really seem very much longer than a regular.
I think
issue.
It's a few pages longer, and
then it's got some like, sketchbook stuff in the yeah. back. But overall for me, I mean, I've been pretty disillusioned with the DC universe over the last couple of years. I've liked some of the Batman stuff. I've liked some of the Green Lantern stuff,
which is the stuff that's not changing.
Yeah, the stuff that's not changing too much. But Justice League has been atrocious for going on probably 3 or 4 years
yeah,
now.
It's been bad, yeah.
The Superman, the whole grounded storyline that Straczynski did was a mess. The yeah. whole Straczynski Wonder Woman storyline was a mess. And those were both basically dropped, you know, mid-storyline. Yeah. Aquaman, they made a mess of him a couple of years ago. Yeah. You know, Teen Titans has been terrible because J.T. Kroll's been writing it. you know, Flash has been okay.
Flash has been good.
But to me, this is Justice League number one. It's probably the best sort of big storyline DC book I've read since.
It seems fun.
Yeah, since maybe Sinestro Corps War, which I thought was great.
It seems more just like fun. Like
it's
like,
fun, and it's not weighed down by continuity.
Yeah,
and you can just jump in and read it.
Yeah,
and that's something that I feel like hasn't been the case recently with DC.
No.
And I feel like it's the whole point of this.
Yeah.
And if that was their goal, then I think that their goal was achieved. And this is a good comic. And I would recommend it to anybody that wants to read just like a fun.
No, I definitely like
pretty straightforward yeah. superhero comic. Yeah. So that was Justice League number one. Over the next few weeks, there are going to be a lot of DC number ones coming out. And we're going to kind of try to talk in depth about quite a few of them. Besides maybe like Hawk and Dove and stuff like that.
Man, well, no, we'll definitely talk about Hawk and Dove.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk about Hawk and Dove, but it's probably not going to be very nice talk. But I guess you guys will find out next week, because next week is Action Comics number one, Hawk and Dove.
How many are there next week?
I think they're like 12 or 13 next week. So, tune in next week and find out where this new DC universe is going.
Yep.
Yep.
See you guys. This train is rolling.
Yep. All right. So I guess that's it for this week's podcast. Jared should be back on next week, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about SPX, talk a little bit about the DC universe, and we'll see you guys next time.
I know.